Chris Jamelli from WBFO. I'm here with Jeff Kelly, who is the editor at Art Voice. And Jeff, Chris Scanlon has been seated in the South District Common Council seat, and he will now have to run for re-election in the fall. How does that shape up?
Well, it shapes up like a free-for-all, possibly. There are several candidates who have expressed interest in running for the seat. First and foremost is Matt Fisher. Matt Fisher is a former aide to Mickey Kearns, who vacated the seat to move to the Assembly. He's well-liked, well-respected for his housing work in the district. Furthermore, he was the one who was endorsed by the South Buffalo Democratic Party Committee. The majority on the Common Council ignored that endorsement to choose someone who they felt would be most likely who they felt would be more amenable to joining that majority. Matt Fisher, they thought might be too aligned with the former majority, the group of the block of votes with whom Mickey Kearns was associated. So they passed him over. So there's a sense in the district that he was wronged, and that's probably much in a very similar way that Darius Pridgen was wronged in a couple of years ago in the effort to fill the Ellicott district seat when Brian Davis resigned. That helped Darius Pridgen win the seat in the election after the filling of the vacancy. It will probably help Matt Fisher too. But there are some other candidates as well. There's Pat Burke. There's Kevin Lafferty. Both of those people, those guys, have declared their candidacy for the seat in the fall. If Chris Scanlon decides to run to retain the seat to which he's just been appointed, then that's at least four candidates. There might be more. That'll make it very hard to predict. Although certainly Matt Fisher has an advantage.
But what made Scanlon such a solid pick for them?
You know, it's hard to say. Chris Scanlon came in the second group of resumes that the Common Council majority asked for. They started the process, opened it up to resumes, did some interviews. Matt Fisher emerged as probably the leading candidate with a couple other runners-up. None of these candidates were palatable to the Common Council majority, though none of them could raise particular objections to Matt Fisher. I will say, in fact, that I left messages for every member of the majority and asked them what were their specific objections to Matt Fisher. Only one person called me back, and that was Council President Rich Fontana, and he was forthcoming. He just said the guy can't get five votes, so we have to move the process on and open it up for new resumes. So Chris Scanlon joined in that second crop of resumes, and for whatever reason, they decided to choose him.
Now, how does the fact that he's got to be reelected in the fall, how does this work for Scanlon in a sense that he's going to have such a short time to actually make a play on the council?
It's going to be very tricky for him to make any sort of impact in the district with the voters in his district. It's going to be very difficult for him to overcome the sense that he was picked because the majority, which is affiliated with Mayor Byron Brown, who's not exactly popular in the South District, that he was picked because he would vote docilely with that majority coalition. And that's poison. That'll be poison in the Democratic primary in South Buffalo.
Now, moving on to the Bethlehem headquarters, Bethlehem Steel headquarters, there's been talk. In fact, we're recording this on Friday. It will be heard on Monday morning, but there's talk of a potential rush to raise that building. And it's a significant building of its era.
And its significance has already been determined by the New York State Historic Preservation Office. Back in 2009, the city of Lackawanna sought Restore New York funds. It's a state program. They sought Restore New York funds to pay for the demolition of that building. And the State Historic Preservation Office basically said, no, let's talk about this. Let's talk about alternatives because it is socially, historically, architecturally significant, and there's no compelling reason to pull it down, not structurally, and there's no rationale, there's no future development plan for the site that requires demolition. You're just asking for money to tear it down. And back in 2009, the city of Lackawanna, after discussing this issue with SHPO, with the Preservation Office, agreed that they would perhaps pursue Restore New York funds to help stabilize the building, to make it preservation ready, if you will. Not to redevelop it, but just to make it ready for some future developer to come along and do something with this really sort of beautiful structure. And in fact, I don't know if there's a compelling reason now to pull it down. There are no plans, again, to redevelop the site. And one local preservationist has been in the building recently and taken photographs that show that despite what the city of Lackawanna inspectors say, the roof is not collapsing.
And what would be the consequences of losing this building?
Well, you know, it's interesting because, you know, we've got this sort of push going on in the city of Buffalo from the mayor's office to target abandoned commercial buildings, decrepit buildings, and demolish them. And sometimes that's a good thing because some of these buildings are beyond repair and they're blight and they're dangerous for kids and, you know, for neighbors. But in a lot of cases, it's not sufficiently forward thinking, I think, in my opinion, as economic development. Because if you tear down some of these structures, which are still viable in some way or another, in some future scenario, you can't get them back. And that means you sacrifice the possibility of economic development, of developments like the warehouse districts that are so well-loved in other cities that become hubs for entertainment.
Cleveland,
art.
Pittsburgh.
Sure, for example, right? If you tear those buildings down, that could never happen. And I think there are a lot of folks who think it would be wise if we considered the possibility of mothballing those buildings, stabilizing them, and so that when and if a market appears, develops for that kind of district in the areas that are anchored by these buildings, the possibility will still exist.
The long sought after development of the waterfront.
Right, for example. For example.
Another name that has come into the news, Boyd Lee Dunlop, is back in the news. Boyd Lee Dunlop, the 85-year-old pianist who recorded his very first album last year to great acclaim, is back in the studio.
He is. He's been back in the studio for the last couple of days recording his sophomore effort at the age of 86. It's envisioned as a solo piano recording. Apparently, I've been talking to the producer and to the producers, I should say, and they say it's going much even better than they'd expected. He is enthusiastic. It's quite a story.
And it's a wonder we still have him.
Absolutely. In fact, you know, so as you say, last fall, his debut album came out to great national attention. There was a sold-out show at Babeville that was just fantastic.
And it charted on Billboard, which is rare for a jazz or blues release of that nature.
Yeah, absolutely. It sold pretty well. But then he had a heart attack. He suffered a heart attack shortly thereafter, and it took a little time for him to recover and to get back behind the piano. But he's there now.
Well, he's a wonderful man, and it's going to be great to hear him once again.
Yeah.
So in the news this week, I'll close out with this question. There was a new study that shows that excessive coffee drinking can actually lead to an extension of life. Is this good news for you?
Oh, God, yes. In fact, you know, today was sort of bike to work day, and so at my favorite cafe in Allentown, Cafe Taza, I was treated to a free cup of coffee because I was on my bike.
Well,
the two things in combination, apparently, will make me live forever.
There you go. Jeff, thanks again for your time. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.